Hello and welcome to episode 44 of the Beyond the Self podcast. I am Africa and my voice is back. Oh my goodness, my voice is back. And you know what? It's not even at 100%, but it's so close to it and it feels so good. I was saying to a client of mine the other day actually that I've only lost my voice a few times in my entire life. And this is one of the times where I'm so grateful to be able to speak. And of course, speaking is a big part of my life. It's a big part of my work. I'm always in conversation either with myself or with my friends. And I'm so used to hearing my own voice. So to not be able to speak physically, it really gave me a new perspective on this whole idea of using your voice and having a voice. So I am very grateful. I'm very grateful to have it back and I'm feeling so much better. Thank you all. Thank you to those of you that sent me your well wishes. I am very grateful and I'm really happy that you enjoyed the little minisode, I put out last week. I just wanted to make sure that I am back in contact and that I let you know what has been on my mind, on my heart, what I've been working on and what I've not been working on, because I've also been resting quite a lot. I've really needed to just rest and to be and to not do so much. And so I feel very good. I have my tea right here with me. I'm just going to pour a little bit more of it. Such a beautiful tea. I'm drinking Wild Ancient Thai. And I've mixed it with a little bit of red tea. With a different type of red tea, should I say. How are you doing? How are you doing? As you can see by the title, we are talking about something that I've dove into in previous episodes and in quite a lot of the work that I do with my one-to-one clients. I talk about imposter syndrome quite a bit, but we talk about it in a different way. And in this episode, you and I are going to be exploring it in a different way. I did do a full dive into this back in 2020, episode 8. I did an entire episode on imposter syndrome, but today we're going to be diving into just a different thread of it. And as you can see by the title, we are exploring how your quote unquote imposter syndrome might actually be right. And I want you to bear with me as we get into this conversation. I want you to bear with me, okay? Because we are not going to be having the typical discussion around it. We are going to be thinking about it in a different way, which is exactly what I've said, but I just want to emphasize that we're going to be thinking about this in a different way. And I'm just going to be inviting you and inviting myself as well to just stay open to a few things. So let's just dive straight into it, because I do have some notes and I don't have too much of an update on other things apart from the fact that I'm healthy and I'm feeling good and I have my tea and I have my whole day ahead of me and I have Lily, who is supporting me with this podcast, like I was saying in the last episode. And that feels like such a relief, because I can just focus on what I need to focus on. I have a book to write. I have all of these things that I can finally give my full energy to. So that feels good. That's about it when it comes to the update. So we can dive right into this episode. And something that I like to do, especially when we're getting into a topic that has specific takeaways, a topic that is also not just about me and my experience, I like to give clear definitions of what we're actually talking about. So because we are exploring the topic of imposter syndrome, it's important for me to define what that actually is. Imposter syndrome is the persistent inability to believe that one's success is deserved or has been legitimately achieved as a result of one's own efforts or skills. I'll repeat that one more time. Imposter syndrome is the persistent inability to believe that one's success is deserved or has been legitimately achieved as a result of one's own efforts or skills. So this is when you, on some level, believe that your accomplishments are not actually deserved. And even when you can see the external evidence of your accomplishments, or when other people point them out to you, or you're promoted because of how skilled and capable you are, none of this actually reassures you. And you constantly have a fear of being exposed. As I mentioned further back in episode 8, and as you can see in any definition and exploration of imposter syndrome, there's this story, this running commentary in your mind and in your entire being that you are going to be exposed as a fraud. So it's really, really important to understand that imposter syndrome is not just a little bit of self-doubt or feeling a little bit uncertain or feeling nervous or starting something for the first time and feeling a little bit unsteady on your feet. No, it's a very, very specific thing. It's a very specific psychological experience that can be all-consuming. And the reason why I wanted to have this conversation with you is because I find, and I'm not the only one to find this, I find that we are in a culture right now of over-diagnosing ourselves and pathologizing, which is essentially making things that are actually quite normal and part of the human experience, we make them abnormal and we over-label ourselves. And I have never been comfortable with that idea of over-labeling. I think it is very, very important that we have the language to describe our internal and external experiences, but I think it can be very limiting and unhelpful, and actually it can deepen any insecurities that you have when you go into the mode of labeling every single thing that you experience. So it's not always useful to label all discomfort in relation to your capabilities or your success or your working and social environment as imposter syndrome. In the same way that it's not useful to label all hesitancy to express yourself truthfully as self-censorship. And I say this as someone that studies and is really, really committed to understanding what self-censorship actually is. Someone who is really fucking committed to getting us to a point where we don't see self-censorship, which is withholding your honest thoughts, beliefs, ideas, concepts, expression, getting us to a point where we don't see that as the default. And at the same time, I don't think it's useful to label every single thing as self-censorship. Or you can also think of this as not labeling all behaviors that contradict your desired goals as self-sabotage, right? Because there are so many nuances and so much context that is required before you just end up saying, yep, I'm sabotaging myself, or yep, I'm self-censoring, or yes, I'm experiencing imposter syndrome. These things mean very specific things, and there are many different episodes on this podcast and other publicly available conversations I've had where you can see me dive into the specifics of all of those things. But today, we are talking about imposter syndrome, so I will stay in this lane of this conversation. But I just wanted to put all of that forward to get us all clear on what the definition is, okay? And to also make it clear from my end that I don't think it's useful to apply that label and many other labels to every internal discomfort that you have. So going back to imposter syndrome, I wanted to share a quote from MindTools, which is a fantastic, fantastic website where they have brilliant resources around different areas of psychology and the human experience and well-being, etc., etc., etc. So please do check out MindTools. But I grabbed this quote from them and it reads, "Imposter syndrome often strikes at moments of success." So this can be when you're starting a new job, when you're receiving an award or a promotion, where you are taking on extra responsibilities such as teaching other people, starting your own business, or becoming a first-time parent. So again, by definition, it's when you feel like your capabilities are actually not enough and you believe that your success is not deserved. You believe that that promotion that you have received, it's not deserved. You believe that you don't deserve to be around this table with other brilliant thinkers, other brilliant professionals, other brilliant artists. There's always this, again, I'm going to use that term all-consuming. It's an all-consuming feeling of inadequacy. Even though externally the proof is there, this is why I encouraged you in episode 8, and I'm sure in an episode I did on perfectionism, to always have a proof list where you add actual evidence of the things that you have accomplished in your life and to refer back to that proof list constantly, right? Because it's so easy, because we live in our own subjective experience, it is so easy to dismiss the things that have brought you here. It is so easy to undervalue your skill set. It is so fucking easy to make yourself believe that you are not worthy or deserving of being in a particular position, even though you have spent X amount of years working hard so you can be there. And I see imposter syndrome in action all the time, actually, not even from myself, because it's something that I have experienced, but because of the type of clients that I work with in my consulting and coaching firm. I mainly work with people that are in the public eye. I work with founders, I work with CEOs, I work with leaders of all different types, all different fields. I also work with a lot of entrepreneurs. And these are people, objectively speaking, that have worked incredibly hard to be where they are. Whether they went to university or not, it's not about that. It's people that have mastered their craft. It's people that have dedicated so much time into equipping themselves with the knowledge, with the wisdom, with the skills, with the experience. And still, a lot of them on some level believe that they don't deserve to be where they are. And a lot of it can be brought, if you, you know, unpick it to its barest bones, a lot of it is tied to a person's self-esteem. A lot of it is tied to a person's self-worth. A lot of it is tied to some of the things they experienced with their family of origin when they were growing up, some of the traumas that they might have, etc., etc. But these are people that are very, very skilled. These are people that are just unbelievable in terms of how much dedication and devotion they have to their craft and what they do. And still, on some level, they have this fear that they're going to be exposed as a fraud. On some level, they feel like their accomplishments are not enough and that they need to work harder to prove themselves. And not the kind of proving that happens in a healthy way, because I think there is something beautiful in wanting to prove to yourself that you can achieve something, right? In proving to yourself and maybe even the people around you that you are capable. But I think there's also a shadow side to that, in that even when you meet that goal, even when you get to that point that you've been trying to get to for years, it still doesn't feel like enough. It still doesn't reassure you. You still feel like you're underskilled. You still feel like you're underqualified. So imposter syndrome is a very real thing, but it's also a very serious thing. It's not just about mild self-doubt. It's not about you doing something for the first time and feeling like you're not doing it very well, so you label it as imposter syndrome. That's not imposter syndrome. And that's what I want to speak to in this conversation, because I don't want you to ever over label yourself. I want you to be able to really reflect on your behavior, to really understand your mindset, to really cultivate self-awareness so you can see the nuances in your experience, so you can take context into account before you label yourself. So when I say your imposter syndrome might actually be right, it doesn't mean that you don't belong in the room or that you're a fraud, okay? It's an invitation to look at whether there's actually, how do I put this? It's more of an invitation to look at whether it actually is the classic definition of imposter syndrome, or is there something else that's pointing to an uncomfortable but important truth? And to better illustrate this, I want to use my own story and something that I experienced some years ago. I think this was about 4 years ago now. And I'm just going to sip my tea before I share that story with you. So this was about, such a beautiful tea. This was about 4 years ago when I had fully stepped into my role as a coach. I had been working with people on a one-to-one level at the time, and I'd really just started to feel more confident in owning the title of a coach, of a developmental coach. I knew that I wanted to work with people that were in leadership positions. I knew that I wanted to support people with their mindset, but not on a surface level. I wanted to look at things in a kind of, in a more scientific way, to take a much deeper approach than affirmations, than telling you, you just have to reframe this way of thinking. I wanted to really start taking my work and myself seriously as a coach, but I'd only been working with people one-to-one for about a year and a half at the time. And I started seeking different mentors. I started seeking people that could support me in actually growing my coaching business, but people that could help me become a better coach, people that could also help me become a profitable coach, because I wanted to do that work full time. And there were a lot of people at the time that were telling aspiring coaches that they only had to be one step ahead. And I think this is still something that happens in the coaching industry, where coaches are teaching other coaches to be coaches so they can teach other coaches to be coaches, etc. So it's pretty much like a pyramid scheme, you know. And this is something that I realized further along down the line once I experienced what I'm about to share with you. So I was coming across some brilliant people that had fantastic marketing, they had brilliant branding, and they really spoke to me as a relatively new coach. They spoke to me because they were saying that you only have to be one step ahead to coach a group of people, that you can move from the model of doing one-to-one and you can move straight into one-to-many, and you don't even need to have that much experience. You just need to have the desire. You just need to have the motivation. You just need to want it enough and it will absolutely happen, right? So for me, as someone that was really getting into the rhythm of being a coach, really starting to understand my craft beyond my own subjective experience, I was doing a shit ton of research. I was learning a lot. I was immersed in coaching psychology. I really wanted to be a good coach because I do think that's important. It was not about earning five figures or six figures or whatever the fuck everyone says in the coaching industry. It's never been about that for me. I've always had a very... I've always wanted to actually be good at what I'm doing. And I've always known that money and making money is going to be the byproduct of me actually being good and skilled at what I'm doing. But a lot of the things that I was hearing at that time really spoke to that part of me that just wanted to elevate and wanted to serve as many people as possible. So I was being told that it's very easy to transition from coaching one-to-one into coaching a group. So I decided that I was going to create a program and I was going to coach a small group. And I'm very happy now, looking back, that I decided that it was going to be a small group. So I ended up coaching a group of six people over a period of 4 months. I took the program that I had been doing one-to-one, which had worked really, really well with a handful of people. So I'd actually tested out my methodology. I'd tested out so many different things. And the coach that I had decided to work with at the time, who told me that I only needed to be one step ahead to move from working with a group to working with six people, she gave me a very loose idea of how I can take my curriculum of one-to-one and change it to one-to-many. And there was a part of me that was like, I don't think I'm ready to be doing this, because to work with someone one-to-one and then to be working with a group, it requires a very different skill set. And I didn't have that skill set. It requires me to move from the role of coaching and even consulting into teaching. And to teach, it requires a very different skill set. You also need to have an understanding of different dynamics, of different communication styles in the room, different listening styles in the room. How do people take in and retain information? Some people are more auditory. Some people are more visual. Some people are more kinesthetic. There's so many different ways that people are. So whether it's a group of six or a group of 10 or a group of 20, there are so many moving parts, parts that don't actually exist when you're working with just one person. So I knew on a deeper level, on a much, much deeper level, but at the time I didn't listen to that deeper level. I knew that I was not ready to work with a group. And when I put some of my concerns forwards to my coach at the time, I was told that it was a mindset issue, that I just needed to change my mindset and then everything would work out with my group. I just needed to trust myself more. I just needed to be more confident. I just needed to do all of these other behavioral things. But that was not the actual problem. The actual problem was that I didn't have enough experience coaching a group. And maybe I could have done practice sessions. To be honest, I had run workshops. I had run a lot of physical workshops. But again, that's a very different experience when you're running a two-hour workshop versus when you're working with a group of six people with so many moving parts for 4 months, right? And also something that I hadn't taken into account was the different stages that everyone in that group is, because it was something that required people to be at a very similar stage. So some people couldn't be at the beginning stage and then somewhere advanced, because then people are not getting exactly what they need. But that's not something that was ever brought to the table by my coach when we were preparing for it. But also, I take full responsibility. That's not something that I even thought about, right? Because I had latched onto this idea that you only have to be one step ahead. So the closer that I got to actually launching the group, as in us starting our sessions for the 4 months, and I started to feel what I labeled at the time as imposter syndrome. I started to feel like I was going to be exposed as a fraud. I started to feel very unprepared. I started to feel really uncomfortable. Even though I had a curriculum, I had planned it out very well. I had put my all into this. When I think about it, I have to give myself some grace, and I'm still in touch. I've continued to work with some people from that group, actually. I'm still in touch with everyone that I worked with at that time. And they gave me incredible feedback and they got a lot out of that experience. But from my end and with the level that I wanted to work at the time and with the level that I work at now, I knew that I was not actually prepared to be leading that group. I knew that my skill set and my level of self-confidence didn't actually match up, because it didn't fucking matter whether I was confident or not. My skill set did not match up. I didn't have the experience that I needed to lead the group at the level that I wanted to lead that group. But if I had, which I did, if I had fully bought into this idea that that discomfort and self-questioning is just imposter syndrome and I just need to reframe my mindset and nothing else needs to change, that would have been absolute bullshit. And I would have carried that with me for the past 5 years into the work that I do now. And it would have meant that I didn't take responsibility of my own inadequacy. Because it was not a mindset issue, it was a skills issue. It was a very practical thing that needed to change. I needed to at least trial working with a group for a shorter amount of time, maybe for a much lower price, as in the entry price for the person to join the group, or just learn how to be a teacher. Take workshops on teaching so that I could shift from just being a coach into being a coach and a teacher, because that's what I was actually doing. When leading a group in that way, you are teaching. So it's a different role that you're undertaking. So of course I would feel unsteady. Of course I would feel unsure of myself. Of course, I would have those feelings of nervousness or that I'm going to be found out because I'm stepping into a role that I'm not actually prepared for. So it would not have been useful for me to label it as classic imposter syndrome, because it wasn't just that. There was something else. I had overestimated my capabilities, and I see this time and time again. And I think this is a conversation that is missed out sometimes when we explore imposter syndrome. We're just told that it's some kind of mindset issue, or it's the environment that needs to change, or it's a representation issue. And those things can also be true, but sometimes it can also be true that maybe you are not quite ready yet. Maybe you haven't acquired the skills that you need for this role. Or if you have been given the role, maybe you need to upgrade your skills, right? Maybe that needs to be a priority. Take on the role and also upgrade your skills at the same time. See where your own blind spots are. See where you might be overestimating yourself. See where you might get support, right? Because that actually then allows you to master your craft. That then allows you to be more confident in what you're doing. And it allows you to cultivate true confidence. So I don't think it's always useful to label everything as imposter syndrome. Or if you experience something that is in the realm of what you would call as imposter syndrome, get curious about what else might be happening there. What else might be happening? So for me, that was one of my biggest lessons about 4 years ago when I made that transition from coaching one-to-one into coaching groups and realizing that I had made that move very prematurely. And I had taken very bad advice from someone that had probably been given bad advice along the way as well, which is so common within the coaching industry, where people that are very well-meaning are being given really shitty advice that has huge repercussions. And actually, some of you might or might not know this, and maybe I've mentioned this in previous episodes, I'm sure, but one of the first things that I started talking about that led me into exploring self-sabotage more, it wasn't just about what's happening in the culture. It wasn't about collective sabotage or cancel culture. It was actually about the coaching industry, because that experience that I had opened my eyes in so many ways. It made me realize that a lot of people were being told, you only need to be one step ahead. You don't need qualifications. You don't even need actual skills. You just need to have the desire. Imagine a surgeon being told they just need to have the desire and the self-trust and they can start operating on people. Imagine. That's a very dangerous way of looking at things. You don't only need to be one step ahead to coach. You need to have the skills. You need to have the experience. You need to have the training, whether that's through someone else or really a deep understanding of the area or the subject. Because when you don't, and you operate only from that self-trust or self-confidence or just purely desire, that's when you will feel imposter syndrome. That's when you will have all of these external accomplishments, whether it's the money, whether it's the clients, whether it's the profile, but deep down inside, you know that it's not quite matching up. Deep down inside, none of those things will ever feel reassuring. And of course, you will have that underlying feeling of being exposed. And listen, this is not going to apply to everyone, but those of you that need this conversation will know how it feels in your body right now. And I hope that I can offer you even a little bit of relief to understand that we don't need to be over-labeling some of these things. Sometimes it's just a practical issue. Sometimes it's you just needing to give yourself more time to gain the right experience, to add more tools to your arsenal so that you can have the right skill set to do what it is you need to do. Okay? Because if you start to make yourself believe that it's purely a mindset issue, that's never going to go away. And those feelings of inadequacy are not just going to go away. Whereas when you actually get better at what it is you need to do, that's when you will feel more confident. And yes, self-doubt is also a normal thing. People, We need to remember it's normal to doubt yourself. It's normal to feel a little bit shaky if you're doing something for the first time or even if you've done it a few times. Repetition is power. Repetition builds confidence. And yes, if you're finding that you've done something so much and you still have debilitating anxiety and distrust of self and others, etc., then there just needs to be an acceptance that you need help. You might need professional help, and that is also fine. But those are not the people that I'm speaking to right now, okay? I'm speaking to those of us that maybe know on some level that we need to get better at doing the thing that we want to do, that we need to continue being a student, that we need to learn more, that we don't actually know enough in this area that excites us, in this area that we love, that we need to practice. And that is okay. And for me, that offered so much relief. And it meant that I didn't just label myself immediately without inquiring about what's actually happening. Because when I think of that time, I was not ready. I had the confidence, I had the self-trust in many areas, but I was not ready to make that big transition from one-to-one to one-to-many. I had missed quite a lot of steps along the way. I had rushed my process. I hadn't given myself enough time. I just hadn't given myself enough time, because something else that lies on the other side of imposter syndrome is something that is called the Dunning-Kruger effect. And some of you might have heard of this. I think it's so fascinating. So the Dunning-Kruger effect is when you overestimate your capabilities. And I have a very beautiful quote here that I grabbed from a website called Very Well Mind, which is similar to Mind Tools in that they provide resources and they have articles and they have tools that you can take on, tools that are very practical and very useful. And it allows for you to understand certain areas of psychology in a way that is really accessible. So Very Well Mind defines the Dunning-Kruger effect as a type of cognitive bias in which people believe they are smarter or more capable than they are. Essentially, it's when low ability people do not possess the skills needed to recognize their own incompetence. The combination of poor self-awareness and low cognitive ability leads them to overestimate their capabilities. And this was me. And I love the fact that this is very straight and direct language. It is not personal. It is not trying to shame you. It is not trying to make you feel bad. We have to understand that there are many sides to some of the things that we experience. As much as someone might experience imposter syndrome where they underestimate their capabilities, there are also people and situations. This is not about people, and this is your identity, full stop. It's something that people will experience in so many different ways, all people, where you overestimate your capabilities. And having the language for this and being able to understand the differences is so important, because again, that example that I gave you of my coaching experience years ago was that I overestimated my capabilities. It's not as if I was overestimating my capabilities, full stop. In that area, I did. That was just the truth. I wasn't self-aware enough to be like, actually, I'm not ready to be leading a group in this way, because I don't know what teaching actually looks like. I can assume I know, or I can try and bring in the skill set that I have when I'm coaching one-to-one in this dynamic, but it's actually not going to work. And people might not get the level of service and experience that they actually require. So let me just wait 6 months. Let me find a course where I can learn how to teach. Let me find a course where I can learn how to understand people's communication styles and people's listening styles, where I can learn to be a better speaker, where I can learn to hold a group. Do I even have the capacity to hold this group for 4 months? If I had tuned into my self-awareness and asked those questions, I wouldn't have found myself feeling like a fraud. I wouldn't have found myself feeling uncomfortable. But I found myself in a situation where I landed quite neatly into the Dunning-Kruger effect, and I overestimated my capabilities in that situation. So I wanted to bring that forward to you so that you can maybe look at some things that you have done in your life, some things that you have experienced that maybe you labeled as imposter syndrome, but when you look a little bit deeper, it wasn't. Maybe it was actually the Dunning-Kruger effect, or maybe it's just that you were not prepared for the role, or maybe it's that you, what else could it be? What are some of the things that I've mentioned? Maybe it's that you need a little bit more time, right? Because that's also something. Sometimes we just need a little bit more time before we jump into things prematurely. And I say this as someone that is a big believer in taking imperfect action, but some things do not require imperfect action. And it doesn't mean that it requires perfect action, but it needs grounded action. You need to be operating from a level of self-awareness, from a level of groundedness, from a level of intellectual humility. And intellectual humility, it's one of the first things that I'm going to leave you with, actually, as an antidote to imposter syndrome and also the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? It's important to recognize your own intellectual limitations without self-judgment, and to stay curious and open to learning and actually developing your skills. And at the same time, intellectual humility is about owning your intellect. It's about owning your capabilities. It's about owning your skill set. It's about owning your experiences and remaining open to places and areas in which you could learn more, in which you could do a little bit better, right? It's crucial that you remain a student for as long as you are alive. It doesn't matter how advanced or knowledgeable you believe that you are. Be a lifelong student. Be a lifelong student. It can happen to all of us that we overestimate or underestimate our capabilities. But as long as you stay curious, you will know which side you're floating between, right? Or rather, which side you're leaning towards a little bit more. And I find that really important. For me, I think I just like being honest with myself. I don't want to bullshit myself. I don't want to bullshit myself, whether it's through my insecurities or being overly confident when I could be a little bit more humble. I just don't want to lie to myself. I don't want to bullshit myself. I don't want to enable or coddle or lie to myself. I just need to know what is, so I can deal with it, so that I can actually course correct. And the second thing that I will just leave you with is just challenge your own beliefs and your worldview. What are some beliefs that you hold strongly that you've never questioned? Maybe beliefs around your capabilities, beliefs around your success, beliefs around your skills, beliefs around your experience. Beliefs around the rooms that you want to be in, beliefs around the rooms that you find yourself in. What are some of the things that come up for you? And look at them and interrogate them if you need to. I have an entire episode on beliefs. I believe it might actually be, no pun intended, episode 2. I think it's episode 2. Last thing. Seek and learn from feedback. If you are someone that has found themselves, and be very honest, overestimating your capabilities, maybe because of excitement or because of scarcity or feeling like you need to do it now because there won't be another chance or whatever it might be, seek and learn from feedback. Instead of seeing feedback and critique as a threat, view it as an opportunity to course correct and grow. And it doesn't mean that you have to take all feedback as gospel. It really doesn't mean that. But you can reflect on your performance and your actions before avoiding and rejecting the feedback. That coaching experience that I had, the first group coaching experience that I had to take feedback from those clients. Not just taking in what went right, what they loved, but also what could have been better. What did they feel didn't quite match up with what they thought that it was going to be? And that some things were very hard to hear, but they made me a better leader. They made me a better communicator. They made me a better listener. They made me a better coach. They made me a better entrepreneur. And I'm so grateful for that, as uncomfortable as it was to hear, even though it wasn't even that bad, but it's still a crush to the ego, right? And it's interesting because I'm recording this on the day that I have my final session with my group for Courage Over Conformity, and it's been a beautiful 8 weeks. It's been incredible for me in so many ways, and it's also been challenging in a beautiful way, because when you're holding space for that many people, when you're holding space in the truest sense for that many people, you have to acknowledge the many moving parts, and it stretches you as a mentor, it stretches you as a teacher. And there are so many different personalities, so many different types, so many different things happening simultaneously. So as much as it has been an expansive and insightful and beautiful experience for me, I have to also take into account that maybe for at least one person, there are some things that they were not happy with. Maybe there's some things that didn't match up again with what they thought that it might be. And I'm excited to hear that kind of critique. I'm excited to hear that kind of feedback, because then it means that I can improve. It means that I can be given a level of insight that I didn't have access to had I not asked those questions. So you have to learn to welcome feedback, but also to seek feedback, because that reduces the chances that you'll be operating from a place of the Dunning-Kruger effect. Okay? I've really loved having this conversation with you, and there's so many places we can go with this. There's so much that I'm sure you're thinking about, and maybe things you hadn't thought about before, maybe things that can offer you a little bit of relief. But I really enjoyed this one, and I recommend that you go back to episode 8 if you haven't already, where I speak about imposter syndrome from the perspective of someone who actually is capable, someone who is actually skilled, someone who is deserving of being in the position they're in, but still feeling those feelings of inadequacy. What can you do? I give some very practical steps and some very practical tools, and I share my own experiences as well. And maybe there are some things in that conversation from 2-3 years ago that I don't feel the same way about now. So I'm excited to go back to that one to see what I've changed my mind on. But I really hope you go back to that and go back to any other episode here. There's so much goodness in this place, and I can say that with a lot of confidence, not overconfidence, but grounded actual confidence, because it's rooted in truth. I am so proud of what I'm doing with this podcast. I'm so proud of the intentionality that I put into it. I never force anything. And I'm glad that can be felt. I really am. And I will just ask you, if you haven't done so already, please rate this podcast wherever you're listening from. It is such a pleasure. It's an absolute honor and a pleasure that I get to do this and it gets to be received. And whether it's useful or not, I just thank myself for trusting that someone out there needs to hear this. And these are conversations that I craved at a time when I couldn't find them. And I really do believe it's what's led me to create these conversations. I'm really of the mindset that if you can't see something out there and it really keeps grating on you in some way that you can't find this thing, it's because you are the person that's supposed to create it. And we are in a time right now where it's never been easier for most of us to create the opportunities that we're not being given. And yeah, I'm a big believer in that. And I think this is just one way in which I exercise that mindset and that belief. And I'm so grateful to you for receiving me and my words. Please continue to share, continue to speak, continue to ask questions. And you can always send me an email at hello@africabrooke.com with any thoughts or any requests for future conversations and areas of exploration. And until the next time, have a wonderful, wonderful week.